like to call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. It is approximately 11:32 p.m. on Monday, January 28, 2018. President Representative Ortiz will be late. Representative Newman is here as alternate for Representative Wilson, who will be excused this week. We have Co-Chair Foster, Representative Tilton, Representative Grenell will be late, Representative Gutford present with us, Representative Thompson is, myself, Co-Chair Seaton, and as I said, Representative Wilson is excused today as well as through the rest of the week. I'd like to advise everybody to check their cell phones and make sure they're on mute. And today we're going to hear from the department overviews from the University of Alaska, the Department of Labor and Workforce Development, and the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. And president of the university is with us. Would you go ahead and introduce yourself onto the record and go ahead and proceed? I do want to mention that would you like to take questions during or would you like to get through your presentation, knowing that your time is limited to about 2:10 this afternoon?
Well, first, thank you very much, Representative Seaton. Jim Johnson, president of the University of Alaska. If you don't mind, I'd like to go through the presentation here and then open it up for conversation. I'll try to be brisk, just like it is outside here, with a nice cool breeze here in Juneau.
Fine, we'll do that. So okay. If there's a point of clarification or sure, a question for clarification, but not a question of policy, we'll hold those to the end of the presentation.
Okay, very good. Thank you, sir, very much. And thank you, members of the committee, for being here today for this overview. I believe my professional staff support here, Michelle Rizik and Miles Baker, who's here as well, have set out the sort of structure of this. And so here are sources for the materials that you're about to see and where you may find them if you would like to probe a little bit and get more detailed information. I'll start with our mission. This is a fairly standard mission for a public university system, three parts: education, research, and service. So again, it's pretty standard. You would see this in most other states. Of course, what is unique about our mission is that we serve Alaska. And when we educate here in Alaska, we educate people in the largest state by far geographically. Our Ketchikan campus is 1,342 miles from our Kotzebue campus. That kind of geographic reach is not comparable to any other institution in the United States. In terms of our research, it is unique in that our focus in research is on the Arctic and on the North, highly relevant to Alaska. And as I think you're well aware, we rank number one in the world in research on Arctic and Northern topics. And then the third piece is service. And again, it's uniquely focused on Alaska. The Marine Advisory Program, for example, and other programs that we operate here in the state really focus on the unique qualities of Alaska and the unique needs that Alaskans have for higher education. We serve all Alaskans. If you were to transpose that picture there onto the lower 48 states, I think you know we touch the two oceans. We would have a campus, the Ketchikan campus would be in South Carolina. We would have a campus in Iowa. We have one in Oklahoma. We have one up in South Dakota. We'd have an NSF-funded world-class research facility in Wisconsin, and we'd have a federally funded Arctic research vessel operating off the coast of Montana. So you see the breadth of our mission here, covering the entire state of Alaska through our three universities, UAA, UAS, and UAF, and through 12 community campuses, along with a number of learning centers all across the state. And this really understates our service to Alaska in that we have literally dozens of online programs, academic programs that are available exclusively online for students, again, wherever they live in our state. In 1956, the delegates to the Constitution saw the wisdom of including the University of Alaska in the Constitution. Of course, as you're well aware, the territorial legislature back in 1917, 101 years ago, created the Alaska Agricultural College and School of Mines, renamed it in 1935, but again included it in 1956. And their main point here, of course, was they knew that a strong higher education system, a strong university, was required for statehood, which of course at that time was a top priority of the state leaders. And I'm hopeful that it continues to be a top priority for leaders here in Alaska. The university is a separate, while we are certainly subject to the Executive Budget Act as provided for in various Alaska statutes, we are separate from the executive branch, and consequently we have a board of regents appointed by the governor, and they of course hire me, and we are empowered again constitutionally and by statute to operate the University of Alaska on behalf of the state. Now getting to some slides that are prescribed, I believe, and I won't go into a lot of the detail here. You can certainly look at that yourselves. I would note a couple of numbers here from the FY10 management plan, where the University of Alaska accounted for 15.35% of total agency operations. In FY19, in terms of the governor's adjusted budget, it would be 13.81%, so a decline of about 10%. And I would note, too, this GF only does include designated general funds in addition to undesignated general funds. Our focus is primarily on undesignated general funds. Included, of course, in the designated are tuitions and other revenues that we get that are not, they are, of course, appropriated, but in a different way than undesignated general funds.
And before you go on, we've been joined by Representative Pruitt.
A slide here that goes into a little bit more detail, focus on University of Alaska line items. All funds over the last 10 years, you'll see significant declines in personnel services, roughly $60 million, about 11%. You'll see a significant decline in grants and benefits, about a 25% decline. You'll see a 32% decrease in travel. Again, a story of funding decline made up in part, not all clearly, but made up in part by increases in tuition rates charged to our students.
Before you go on, I think we had a clarification question.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I was just wondering if we could get some more information so we could clarify how the designated funds are the original source of where they come from, so we can kind of, and then the other funds, we can kind of see how much of them come for charitable contribution stuff. So if we get that information, I think, appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Happily. Thank you very much.
And Representative Pruitt, just so you know, they've asked to go through the presentation. We'll have questions, policy questions at the end, but if you have a point of clarification requesting something, we can do that.
Thank you very much.
Unfortunately, I just went through that spiel, and Representative Guerra has joined us, so we are waiting for policy questions to land, but we will take clarification questions throughout the presentation. Thank you for joining us.
Very good. I'll continue now, and on slide 8, and you see here the story of general fund only over the last 10 years, and it's a pretty simple a story of increase through FY13, decline in 14, a bump, and then a considerable disinvestment, basically, in the university since FY15. The year-over-year reduction in undesignated general funds over this period, just as a reminder, 378 down to 317, for a cumulative reduction over that period of $145 million. Similar story here in terms of same pattern, and I don't know that I need to say more. It's The slope is negative. In terms of program areas, this was a question from the committee, I believe, and we've organized here in terms of our mission, primary mission, educational mission, research, and service, and the amount of UGF, DGF, and other funds going into each component of our mission, in addition to employees, full-time and part-time, who directly support those specific missions, the number of credit hours produced, students served, degrees conveyed, invention disclosures that have been made over the period, and members of the public who have benefited from our multiple and widespread service programs across the state. You can see some of the costs recuperated here in the education area. Primarily that's tuition and fees. In research, it's federal and other grant dollars that are leveraged by the state's general fund investment. And then in terms of service, various fees, donations, et cetera. These all three of these activities, of course, are directly tied to our mission on behalf of the state. And we have some figures here in terms of our effectiveness. I am proud of the effectiveness of our faculty, staff, and students across the university system, especially in light of the significant decrease of investment in the university and consequently the reduction of our capacity to actually meet our mission for the state. So looking forward, we are really aspiring to do nothing short of creating a culture of education in Alaska. By the numbers, we're not there. And we believe that it is critically important to use the tremendous resources and assets of the University of Alaska to meet the state's very serious challenges. You know them as well or better than I do. The highest health care costs in the country, very high energy costs, high rates of crime, highest unemployment in the United States, very narrow economic base, and on and on. And it's been shown in state after state, in nation after nation, that by increasing educational attainment, life expectancy goes up, health care costs go down, unemployment goes down, incomes go up, incarceration rates go down, recidivism goes down, et cetera, et cetera. And so it's our view that based on our mission for the state, that it is a wise investment in higher education, again, in terms of what we do on behalf of the state of Alaska. I think you're aware of our strategic pathways process. We tried to answer the question here in light of the significant budget cuts. How do we restructure ourselves? How do we reorganize ourselves in order to meet our mission for the state? 230 faculty, staff, and students staffed 22 committees, and we went through the university system A to Z and reviewed, came up with options, and made a number of very dramatic organizational changes in order to make ourselves as effective as we can possibly be. And this single slide here really summarizes our statewide mission on behalf of the state, and also in the middle part here focuses in on each of our universities and their unique contributions to that mission. And I want to emphasize the word unique because we certainly want to take advantage of the special characteristics of each one of the universities, while at the same time we try to build on what's common about them. And that's what you see really at the bottom of this slide. So this captures the tension that we need to manage in this diverse university system between what makes sense to be distinctive at each university and what makes sense to be in common across the university system. So as we look forward, in order to create that culture of education in the state and to meet the state's needs for higher education, the Board of Regents has adopted 5 goals. As you'll see in just a moment, they have not only adopted goals, but measures going out 8 years, out to 2025. And our top priorities are economic development on behalf of the state, workforce development, growing our research on behalf of the state, degree attainment, critically important for us, and then operating in a more cost-effective manner. So here are the goals that the regents adopted in November. You see the five here, and then under each goal, there are two ways in which we will measure a goal accomplishment going out to 2025. In some cases, these are extremely ambitious goals, but I believe we must, given the huge education gaps in Alaska, given our serious challenges, healthcare costs, educational attainment, et cetera, we must have ambitious goals and support attainment of those goals. So you see STEM graduates, science, technology, engineering, and math. That's a critical component for economic development. We want to increase those. Invention disclosures is a standard way in which universities contribute to economic development. We're cranking those up, as you see. Workforce, while we will certainly continue to focus on welders and accountants and engineers and others, the Board of Regents asked themselves, well, if we got two occupational areas right, what would those two be? What would be the most impactful for our state? Education, teachers, and health care. Those would be the top two, and you see those figures going out to 2025. In terms of research, we want to continue to be number one, and that's for a lot of good reasons, and I'm happy to go into more detail when it's when we get time for questions. And then a standard measure for research effectiveness is expenditures. And so we want to drive that number up by increasing our competitiveness and by increasing receipts from the federal government, in particular for research. And a lot of that will be focused on health research. Increasing a degree attainment, this is two elements. One is driving enrollment up. That is a significant increase, as you see, from 29,171 up to 45,000. But as a percentage of the state's population, that 45,000 would be the same percentage of the state's population who were students at the University of Alaska in 1975. So this is a case of going back to the future. And over this period since then, we've declined, actually, in the percentage of Alaskans in higher education, and it's critical for our state that we drive that number up. There are other states that are higher than this. Oregon, for example, is north of 7% of its population. We believe it's reasonable to be about 6%. And then increasing completion rate. This has been a tough issue for the university for a lot of years. And so in addition to increasing enrollment, we want to increase, if you will, throughput and increase the number of folks who are getting degrees. And the emphasis here is not only going to be on baccalaureates, but actually a major focus here is workforce credentials, endorsements, associate's degrees, that sort of thing. And I'll foreshadow now an element of our budget request, and that is a 25% tuition discount in those occupational endorsements, short-term, highly focused on high-demand workforce areas to really try to give Alaskans an opportunity to move up quickly through university and community campus training. And then finally, to operate more cost-effectively. These are goals that the regents have set for how we can measure basically increasing our effectiveness, our top line, faster than we're increasing our bottom line over this period of time. The state operating budget trend here, you know the numbers as well as I do. They've been heading south for the last 4 years. And looking at FY19, the governor is at 317. The Board of Regents, based on their constitutional obligation, I believe, and based on the hard work they have done to establish these goals and look over the various priorities at the university to meet those goals, is proposing an operating budget of $341 million for FY19. slide 16, this is a breakdown of the FY19 operating budget. There is, of course, considerably more detail, which we can go into with the subcommittee, I imagine, as the session goes forward. But you see the delta between FY18 and FY19 is roughly $24 million, and 9.7 of which for fixed cost increases. You see the layout there. And then strategic investments, roughly $15 million. And of course, underneath each one of these strategic investments are specifics. It's often asked, so what did you cut? I mean, what has happened at the university over the last several years? So I think it's important to note, again, roughly 50 academic and degree and certificate programs have been suspended or discontinued. We today employ roughly 1,200 fewer employees than we did 3 years ago. We have reduced administration in particular, 36% of statewide administration. You see the bottom line there. If you come all the way down under SW, you'll see the percentage change in personnel headcount, dramatically larger than any other unit of the university. Staff have taken a larger share of the reductions than faculty over this period of time. Now, these are not all layoffs. I think it's critically important to note. There's attrition built into here, so many times, you know, if a faculty or staff position becomes vacant and the decision was made not to fill that, then we would have one less headcount. And so those would be included in these counts. Here's some just examples of some of the program reductions that have been taken. I note here a few of the strategic pathways implementations. We had three schools of management with three deans and three bureaucracies down to two. We're leveraging our purchasing, so it's being coordinated across the system as opposed to being done individually by each university. Procurement offices are lining up under a single procurement officer's leadership. A similar structure is being done with grants and contracts administration. And then we're investing in streamlining and automating administrative processes, backroom functions that really don't add to the distinctiveness of each one of the universities, but really is, again, a behind-the-curtains type process. We think it's important to standardize those and automate those. So those are just a few. I think another, of course, is the consolidation or creation of the Alaska College of Education, rather than three deans and three schools of education consolidating to a single executive dean. The faculty and staff would continue at those other universities, ensuring access for students across the entire state, but there would be much enhanced coordination and alignment of our teacher education programs statewide. This was met very positively by the superintendents. I meet with those 54 superintendents regularly, and they were calling for much more alignment of our programs and standardization, and so that's the direction we're heading there. Not an uncontroversial action taken by the Board of Regents. We have other legislative priorities than the operating budget. We certainly have a capital budget request. You're well aware of our deferred maintenance backlog. There's $50 million in for that in our budget. We also have the education tax credit, which expires at the end of this year. I believe there's legislation in this body and also in the other body to continue that very beneficial program, linking business interests in Alaska with those of the university. Really positive investments in workforce development and research and other connections between employers and the university that are very, very valuable. The Higher Education Fund, which funds two scholarship programs, one a merit-based scholarship, the Performance Scholarship, and the other a needs-based program, the Alaska Education Grant. It's critically important for our students that these programs continue to be funded. We've seen clear evidence of the value of the Performance Scholarship in terms of increasing readiness of students when they graduate from Alaska high schools to come to the university. They don't require nearly the developmental coursework that they did. And in fact, our developmental course requirements have been declining, which is a very positive trend. And then Alaska ranks among the lowest in the country in availability of needs-based grants. And so we think that's critically important to maintain this funding to ensure that Alaskans, no matter what socioeconomic background they come from, they have the opportunities to achieve through higher education. And then solving our land grant deficit, I talked about this last session. We continue to work that in close cooperation with the administration here and in collaboration with our federal delegation and federal agencies. Just a quick reminder, only Delaware got a smaller land grant than we did, and we think it's critically important for the university, not next week or next year necessarily in terms of diversifying our revenue sources, but certainly 5 years out or 10 years out, it's critically important for us. So that's the presentation, Mr. Chair. Happy to take any questions you might have.
And before we go, I want to recognize that Representative Ortiz and Representative Granite joined us some time ago, and Representative Foster.
Just two quick questions. The short answers are fine. Thanks for being here. And on page 16, increase degree attainment. We want to increase the university's budget by $7 million for that. Just curious what the bulk of that cost would be. And then also over on page 19 on the extend the education tax credit, it says simple concept, complicated statute. The formula is pretty simple, so I was just curious what part of that was complicated. So you can answer those.
Thank you very much. Representative Foster, primarily in the increased degree attainment, that is going to be more online courses. Alaska ranks number one in the country in the percentage of our population with some college and no degree. Those folks are not quitting their jobs or leaving their families at night to go to class. And so we need to step up availability of online courses for those students. Number two is to step up our collaboration with K-12. The school districts all across the state, dual enrollment programs in particular, or concurrent enrollment programs, are incredibly effective at preparing students for college work. It turns out, just one example is the Middle College High School that we operate in conjunction with the Mat-Su School District. 75% of those completers attend a University of Alaska campus, with an average of 30 university credit hours done, requiring zero developmental or remedial work when they get to the university. So we want to step those up. In addition to that, scholarships in high demand areas. So that's primarily where the funding would go. Then to your second question, in terms of the complexity of the education tax credit, it applies to, I'm going to say, 10 different taxes. It might be 9, it might be 11, but something like that. And so the title is actually quite complex, and the language of the bill is as a result of the sheer number of corporate income taxes it applies to, makes it complex. But the concept, you're absolutely correct, is extremely simple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so we have Representative Grin, Guttenberg, Thompson,
Pruitt. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Thank you. Looking at page slide 17, going through workforce reductions, is there a specific number of actual professors, people in the classroom, that has been reduced? And is there can we make the correlation between the discounted and suspended programs on slide 18?
Through the chair, Representative Grin, we can get that number for you. It's not necessarily here, but. And there is, to some extent, a correlation between faculty line reductions and discontinued programs. The challenge we have, of course, is our obligation to students to teach them out. So if we discontinue, say, a sociology degree, for example, or a resource economics degree, we have done those. We have an obligation to make sure those students get the courses they need to complete. So we can't turn a program off and just leave our students hanging. So there is a lag there in terms of when we're actually able to, particularly when it comes to tenured faculty. If it's adjunct faculty or term faculty, those we hire on a year-to-year basis, those are the folks, and you'll, in these numbers, those are the ones who actually are the ones that we tend to reduce more quickly. Okay, very good.
And if you send that through to us, we'll distribute.
Very good. Thank you.
Representative Guttenberg and Tom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On page 16, the UAF engineering building operating costs, I guess I was on the assumption somewhere that was built into your base, but that isn't. So if that's not funded, that, regardless of everything else, either we shut the building or we take the cut.
Well, through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, it's an absolutely critical facility for our mission, and I think it is appropriate that the state pay the operating costs for that critically important facility. If, however, it doesn't, I believe there's no choice but to continue operating the facility, and what that would do is force reallocation. It would force reductions in other places in order to continue operating. That is absolutely mission critical for us, engineering education and engineering research. The Alaska Center for Energy and Power, world-class alternative energy research organization, is housed in that building, and so that's what would be forced as a result of non-funding of that line.
Thank you.
Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I know I've asked this in the past, and I don't remember what the answer was. So maybe you could refresh it. On page 7, miscellaneous, it jumps from the $5 million area to 15 to 23 up to where this year is $26 million. What is the miscellaneous?
Through the chair, Representative Thompson, I'm going to defer to someone smarter than me to answer that question.
Through the chair, Representative Thompson, so we have aligned that. Oh, for the record, Michelle Rizik, Vice President, University Relations. So we've aligned that definition with the state's definition, and what that represents now is our debt service. That's the University of Alaska's debt service.
Follow up.
Now, follow up, President Thompson.
I lost my place. Oh, I was just going to ask Mr. Chair about the tax credits. And you kind of explained it already, but how many of these tax credits that money is used to match federal grants? Is that pretty sizable amount of grant matching?
Through the chair, Representative Thompson, I can't give you a number right off the top of my head. The large expenditure here is for scholarships in particular. There is some. The fish processing industry actually has been a major contributor to the university, certainly for workforce, but particularly for research. And I think that has provided a tremendous benefit to our fisheries faculty, oceanography faculty, as they compete for funds at the national level.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple questions, but the one that's kind of the most important here is I think that the land grant deficit concern, that one's you brought up last year, mm-hmm. and that's out of our hands, but I'm wanting to know if there's a way that we can assist you in it. Of course, ANWR, for years we had resolutions we put forward, and every year it seemed like nothing was happening on ANWR. We'd ask our delegation, should we continue to put resolutions out, and they'd say, please continue to send us resolutions that shows your support. Would it benefit you if we were to put out our support through a resolution saying that this is of concern, that this will assist you in being able to make sure that you have the ability in the long term to be able to fund, looking at, of course, the concern of the state to be able to fund? Is there something that can we assist you with that, and would you be willing to work with, and I'll throw myself out there as willing, I don't usually do a lot of legislation, but I recognize the importance that this is, that something you'd be willing to work with us so that we could assist you on?
Through the chair, Representative Pruitt, absolutely. This is, as you know, we've talked it through. This really is more of a federal issue given the state constitution's prohibition on the dedication of land to the university. As we learned from a 2009 state Supreme Court decision. So it really has to be at the federal level. But I would think that a resolution or some other assistance from this body would be very, very helpful in our push to achieve a satisfaction of our long-time land-grant deficit. So thank you.
And we have about 4 minutes left, and we have Representative Newman, Garrett, and then Edward.
Mr. Chair, on page 10, we look about research, and you, under Alaskan Serve, talks.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. Page 10, under research, innovation disclosures average 54 per year over 5 years to lead commercialization for technologies. What's the university's policies on intellectual property for those? It seems to me that the university could make a considerable amount of money off the intellectual property of these inventions that are coming out of the university. Are we getting anything out of that?
Through the
Do
chair,
we own the patents?
Through the chair to Representative Newman, yes, and would be happy to provide some detail on that. We have a revenue distribution schedule that is actually negotiated into the collective bargaining agreement with our faculty union. And so there's a distribution. So I'm going to make it up. The first $100 or the first $100 million, a certain percentage goes to the faculty, a certain percentage goes to us, and then it's
just get that. And then on page 18, under strategic pathways implementations, three schools of management consolidating to two. I thought the legislature had tried to persuade the university to go into a one university system as opposed to the three systems that we have now. Could you explain your goals and where you want to try and head there?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, there are very serious institutional accreditation issues that we face. And the Northwest Commission on Colleges and Universities down in Washington State accredits our institutions, not specific programs, but the institutions. And for us to move in that direction would require several years of effort. We had active communication with the commission. I, in fact, engaged an expert in accreditation to study the issue. And my view, and I talked certainly through this with the regents, it was certainly their decision, was that that would be probably a massive distraction while we were trying to generate enrollment, while we're trying to meet the needs of the state. And so instead of applying resources to a sort of regulatory process from people outside of Alaska who, you know, play the blue rock, now bring us a green rock, now bring us a red rock game, we thought let's not bother with that. We can achieve what we need to achieve given our three institutional accreditations.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think the goal behind that was to try and get to one administrative cost for efficiencies, but also it's my understanding that the university, the biggest problem they have with this is they can't transfer credits between universities like that, and if that is a problem.
Through the chair, Representative Newman, I'm happy to provide you a report on that. There's zero problem transferring credits between our university campuses.
Thank you. Representative Garrett and Denver.
Thank you. Two of these I'll just ask you to get back to me on. One, there's a focus on increasing STEM graduates, yeah. And I have to say I want to make sure that there's no decrease in the emphasis on liberal arts education. So if you could let me know what your plan is on that. I don't want one coming from the other, personally. Number two, from FY12 through this current fiscal year, can you let us know if and how much the decrease in funding that you've received has led to a decrease in grant funding you're able to leverage? And then I have a question. On page 18, it says you've discontinued the clinical social work practice program. What is the GC clinical social work practice program? I don't know what GC means.
I'll have to get back to you.
Okay, because there is some discussion periodically by folks that our Children's Services Agency hires caseworkers who are not social work graduates, and if we're decreasing the number of social work graduates, that doesn't help them.
It might, through the chair, it might be graduate certificate, but we'll confirm.
Okay, and Representative Gutenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In interest, I will ask the question, and you can get back with me later. I know you have some people back in D.C. working on some issues, but in last year's 2018 and again in 2019's Camel book, there's a line item for taking over a seismic buoy array across the Gulf of Alaska. Mm-hmm. It's not that we were just taking it over from the feds, but the feds were about to move it to someplace else in the world. And I think in the face of what we did last week, the value of having a seismic array in the Gulf of Alaska. So could you let me know as the Finance Subcommittee Chair what the status of that is?
Through the chair, absolutely, Representative Gutenberg.
And thank you very much for the presentation, and there'll be more details, and those can be followed up through the subcommittee process, and then we'll come back to the committee later through the recommendations subcommittee. So thank you very much again. We'll take it.
Thank you all.
At ease while we pull up the slides for Department of Labor and Workforce Development. Thank you. Go ahead and take a seat at the table, and we'll be at ease. We are coming back to order. We'll now hear from the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. We have the Acting Commissioner Cashin and Administrative Services Director Harbor here, and they're at the table. And so we'll begin the presentation. And would you prefer to have questions wait till the end? We have until 2:50 for your presentation, or would you rather have them interspersed during the presentation? It's your choice.
At the end, Mr. Chair, if at all possible.
Okay, thank you. And again, if there's a question for clarification only of understanding the data, we'll take those as we go. All the questions.
Okay, thank you very much. Good afternoon, Chair Seaton and members of the committee. My name is Greg Cashin. I'm the Acting Commissioner for the Department of Labor and Workforce Development, and with me today is Paloma Harbor, our Admin Services Director. And thanks for inviting us here today to give an overview of the department's fiscal year 2019 budget. The department's mission is to provide safe and legal working conditions and advance opportunities for employment. The department accomplishes this mission by protecting Alaskan workers through statutory and regulatory consultation and enforcement, developing an Alaska workforce for Alaska's jobs, and income replacement for injured, disabled, and unemployed Alaskan workers. As requested on this slide, we have provided links to our mission and key performance indicators, our fiscal year 19 budget details, and performance measures from all of our divisions. And I'm going to turn the most of the remainder of the presentation over to Paloma Harbor to go into our budget with a little more detail.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead and put yourself on the record.
Yes, thank you. Good afternoon. For the record, Paloma Harbor, Administrative Services Division Director for the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. I'm going to walk you through these following 10-year look-back slides, which were provided by the Legislative Finance Division. This chart shows the department's general fund budget since fiscal year 2009. It is important to know that general funds includes both unrestricted general funds and designated general funds. As this slide shows, there have been significant cuts to the department's state-funded programs since fiscal year 2015, and UGF for the department has been cut 38% over that time frame. In fact, we are $7.3 million below where we were in fiscal year 2009. This chart shows changes in the department's budget since fiscal year 2009 by expenditure category. The department's personal services budget is almost at the same level that it was in fiscal year 2009, and yet we have 224 fewer budgeted positions. This is because position costs, such as wages and benefits, have increased over this time frame. Also worth noting is the significant reduction to our grants and benefits of $22.3 million. This is partly due to the significant state funding reductions that I mentioned previously, and partly due to federal and other funding declines as well. This chart shows the department's general funds by division. Again, general funds means unrestricted and designated general funds. This slide can be hard to follow because in fiscal year 2017, the department consolidated two divisions, business partnerships and employment security, into one division, Employment and Training Services. I think worth highlighting on this slide is that the Commissioner's Office and Administrative Services budget for fiscal year 2019 is almost $1.9 million less than it was in fiscal year 2009. This is because we have really focused our cuts on reducing administrative and overhead expenses in the department. We analyze every position that becomes vacant, and we review every lease that comes up for renewal. We have cut UGF spending on leases by $1.2 million since fiscal year 2015. This chart shows a similar picture to the previous slide, but it includes all funds. Again, the division consolidation in fiscal year 2017 that I mentioned previously makes this chart hard to follow. But as noted on the slide by Legislative Finance, the department's budget since fiscal year 2009 has decreased 15%, or $26.4 million. And as I stated earlier, this is partly due to state funding reductions and also federal and other funding reductions. As requested, the next several slides reflect the department's budget by division, broken down by component or program.
And before you go, just for the people on the line as they're trying to follow the slide, we're on slide number 7.
I did go kind of fast. Thank you. Our rating of importance to the mission was based on guidance provided by the co-chairs. Critical means a program that is directly meeting the department's mission. Important means a program that provides indirect support that would need to be reassigned if the program did not exist. And status quo means a program that has historically been funded because of statutory requirement, but has no real impact on the department's mission or potentially hampers the department's functioning. The department was not given specific guidance on rating of effectiveness, so our department used high, moderate, and low. Using very strict criteria for determining what is constitutionally required, OMB determined that the commissioner's office was the only thing in our department that is partially constitutionally required. This slide reflects the programs within our workers' compensation division. While the department has rated the effectiveness of the workers' compensation program as high, we do recognize that there is still room for improvement, and that is why we have worked with the governor's office on House Bill 79 and House Bill 303. The department has rated the importance of the Second Injury Fund as status quo and its effectiveness as moderate. This program is meant to facilitate the reemployment of injured or disabled workers, and while the program works, many other states have eliminated the Second Injury Funds because the Americans with Disabilities Act largely fulfills this purpose by prohibiting discrimination on the basis of disability. The sunset of this fund is included in House Bill 79. The department also rated the importance of the Workers' Compensation Appeals Commission as status quo and its effectiveness as low. We have worked with the governor to introduce House Bill 69, which would repeal this specialty commission and return these appeals to the courts. The programs within our Labor Standards and Safety Division are critical to our department's mission of protecting Alaska's workers and are highly effective. The one item rated status quo within this division is the Alaska Safety Advisory Council, which is, according to statute, is responsible for organizing the annual Governor's Safety Conference. Members of the council take this responsibility very seriously and do a great job with the conference. In fact, they bring in more money through sponsorships than is necessary to cover the cost. We've ranked the council's effectiveness as moderate because we believe this group could be even more effective if it were privatized. The council is interested in privatization, but more work needs to be done before we can move forward with the required legislation. The programs within our Employment and Training Services Division are critical to the department's mission of advancing employment opportunities for Alaskans and our core service of providing income replacement for temporarily unemployed workers. This division is relatively new and by far the largest in the department because it represents the consolidation of two other divisions into one. Through that consolidation, the department was able to eliminate 10 positions, reduce unrestricted general fund spending by $300,000, and reduce administrative costs, which put more funds out on the street as grants to train Alaskans. The workforce development component of our Employment and Training Services Division has some ongoing annual programs that we've displayed on this slide. These programs are highly effective and critical to achieving the department's mission. As mentioned previously, there are fewer ongoing programs than there once were, but the department has been successful in seeking one-time competitive federal grant opportunities to help try to fill the gap. In fact, we currently have competitive federal grant awards to expand apprenticeship to non-traditional industries such as healthcare, help reduce recidivism by providing employment and training services to inmates before release, and to provide disabled youth with work experience to help them obtain and maintain employment. We are using non-permanent positions for these temporary grants to ensure no future state obligation once these grant funds end, but we hope to be equally as successful in the future as other grant opportunities arise. Our Vocational Rehabilitation Division is focused on delivering services to disabled Alaskans. These federally and statutorily required programs are highly effective and critical to the Department's mission of advancing employment opportunities for all Alaskans and our core service of providing income replacement for disabled Alaskans. I want to highlight what is included in special projects because that name can be a little bit confusing. That's this component here. Our special projects component is meant for special federal grants that enhance the services we provide through our client services program. These include supported employment, which is allocated to individuals with the most significant disabilities, and an assistive technology program, which helps disabled Alaskans test and identify technology that can assist them in their daily lives and in seeking employment. The Alaska Vocational Technical Center, or AVTEC, in Seward, is critical to the Department's mission of advancing employment opportunities for Alaskans. AVTEC is also highly effective, with an average graduation rate of 92% over the last 5 years, and an average of 90% placement rate for their graduates in their area of training within a year. The Department's budget for AVTEC includes two changes in fiscal year 2019. First is a change of $250,000 of unrestricted general funds to designated general funds. Due to AVTEC's continued efforts to raise revenue through increasing partnerships and contract training, we believe that 5% of AVTEC's UGF can be replaced with program receipt authority without negatively impacting services. Second is a designated general fund cut of about $173,000 related to the Technical and Vocational Education Program, or TVEP. When overall employment and wages in the state decline, revenue to the TVEP account declines. TVEP funding reductions are necessary to avoid a shortfall. Finally, as requested by the committee, this slide shows the department's health care costs over the last 5 years compared to the department's total budget during the same time frame. While total health care costs are down, the percentage that they represent of the department's budget has gone up. It is worth noting, again, that our position counts are down significantly over this time period. And if they weren't, we would be paying a lot more in health care costs. To help drive these costs down, we are committed to doing more to promote vitamin D and overall health with our employees. Just last week, we hosted a wellness event in our conference room at our building over the lunch hour. This provided our employees a convenient opportunity to talk with a health coach about how they might improve their personal well-being. That concludes our presentation, and thank you for the opportunity to present to you today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just curious, how many job centers in the last few years have been closed, and where were those?
Through the chair, Representative Foster, there were four job centers closed in Kotzebue, Utqiagvik, Seward, and Eagle River. For everybody's edification, I just received a picture this morning from Commissioner Dragas, and thought I'd share it.
At this point, have there been discussions to close out any more job centers?
As we mentioned previously, we look at every single position as it becomes vacant and every single lease as it comes up for renewal. Some of our smaller job centers, if the position becomes vacant due to a retirement or attrition, then we might look at closing it.
Thank you. Thank you. We have Virginia Burkey and Johnson and Grant.
So you spoke about an overall, spoke about an overall 22% cut in funding from FY15, is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, it was 38% of our unrestricted general funds since fiscal year 2015.
Okay. So can you summarize some of the opportunity costs involved with those cuts? In other words, what are some of the things that your department was doing back in the better days that we're not doing now? And what the cost of the, whether it's the cost mainly to the worker, safety, where are we coming up short?
Sure. Again, through the chair, Representative Ortiz, we've the majority of the cuts have been in workforce development grant programs, state-funded grant programs. We cut the Alaska. I'm sorry.
Can you talk into the mic?
Oh, sorry.
If you turn that way, you're turning away
from the mic. Okay. I won't look at you, but I'll answer your question. We've cut the Alaska Youth First program, which provided career experience and training opportunities for youth. We've cut the Career and Technical Education Grant Program, which helped provide grants to school districts for career and technical education. And we cut the Oil and Gas Training Program, which was trying to develop an Alaskan workforce for an oil and gas.
Construction academies.
Yeah. And the construction academies are about half of what they used to be.
Thank you. Is there a follow-up?
And then a follow-up, if I may. Mm-hmm. You mentioned AvTech in your presentation, and can you tell me how an average person comes to attend AvTech, where the clients are coming from for attending AvTech?
Yes. I don't have all that information in front of me. I do know that they have students from over 100 communities that attend AvTech. A lot of students from rural Alaska. We have two programs recently, one with NACTech, where they bring their students to AvTech to see what they can do as far as continued training opportunities, and one with a group called Excel Alaska. They brought 60 youth to AvTech to get some training experience, see what life would be like on campus. So they come from all over. But the majority of the students do come from the Kenai Peninsula area because that's where they're located.
Thank you, Representative Ortiz. I just might add to that that there's also self-paid people as a graduate of AvTech, when it was a skill center. There's also people that pay their own as well as getting another agency to help support them through grants. So now we're going to Representative Brooke.
Yeah, thank you. On AvTech, I just want to make sure that you had said that there was a move, I think, of $250,000 from UGF to DGF. I'm trying to make sure, is the receipt authority that you were looking for specifically, or was there some other funding source that you're looking to offset?
Through the chair, Representative Pruitt, that is receipt authority, so it's from student tuition and fee revenue. And also contract training revenue.
Then we are to Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I'm just curious about the AvTech program and the university programs that have vocational and technical training also. Such as the nursing program at AvTech, and there's a two-year program at UAA on nursing that I know those two were both going a couple years ago. Are there other competitive things that are taking place, or do you coordinate with the university on some of the training programs?
Through the chair, Representative Thompson, we cut the allied health program at AvTech 2 years ago. We really focused, when it comes to AvTech and reviewing its programs, on ensuring that there isn't other alternatives and duplication. And that's one of the reasons we cut the Allied Health Program.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Surprise, I'm going to ask about Avtec. Just a general question of regarding their cuts in past several years and enrollment. If you don't have that in front of me, sending that to the committee, that'd be great. But just some more details on that before the subcommittee, I'd appreciate it.
Sure. We can provide that.
And Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Welcome, Commissioner, Acting Commissioner Cashin. You've been here a while. What is your, I'm looking at, this is an interesting presentation. I don't think I've ever seen one that gives so many funded with the positions funded, budgeted but unfilled. Counting those out, it looks like there's over like 173 positions that are funded but unfilled. Is that right? I mean, I just was going through your numbers where it says how many you had filled and how many were actually budgeted for those positions, how much money you had budgeted for it, how many positions budgeted.
Through the chair, Representative Newman, there is a difference between the number of budgeted positions and filled positions. As I noted on the slides, I tried to be clear, the number of filled positions is changing constantly. I mean, we make hires every day, and then we have resignations every day. This data was as of December 15th, 2017, so it's a point in time, but we were asked to provide how many filled positions we had as of that point in time, so we did that. It's normal to have vacancy in a department, and which is why the Office of Management and Budget requires us to have a vacancy factor that they unfund.
It seems like, thank you, Mr. Chair, it seems like that's a tremendous amount of funded but unfilled positions. And I think if you put in a vacancy factor with the number of positions within a department, I'm not quite sure what that was at, but I think that the committee should actually look at, I mean, 170-some positions filled or unfilled, and I don't know. I was just going by their numbers. Okay. And a second question, Mr. Chair, it seems there was some discussion, and I don't know if it was the AFTEC or where it was at, but you changed unrestricted general funds, and you changed the coding on that to designated funds, and I believe you said it was for tuitions and other program receipts like that. And generally, Mr. Chair, all funds go back into the general fund, go back distributed by the legislature so that we can see how that money is spent and rolled through the budgets. But changing the funding code from UGF to DGF, I think, is an accounting practice that makes it so that money's not visible. Why was that done?
Through the chair.
I don't understand why that was done.
Through the chair, Representative Newman, it's just different flavors of money. If Avtec generates the money itself, then it gets coded as general fund program receipts, and it's automatically called a designated general fund. So what we've done is said, Avtec, you're doing good work. You're generating more revenue, entering more partnerships. You get to support your programs with the money that you generate instead of it being on unrestricted general funds. But it's still in the budget. You still see the programs. We still report on it, our instructors and everything else, so you still see it in the budget.
That's my point, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. So, and Representative Newman, I think that you weren't on the Finance Committee when we went through the vacancy factor presentation. And so, hopefully, what we'll do is get you with Legislative Finance to work on that as well as vacancy factor is our
responsibility.
And so, anyway, appreciate that. Further questions?
I don't think so, Mr. Chair.
Cost experience services, and UGF won't be having to be diverted to other things. So thank you very much on that,
right.
And I look forward to working with you as we go forward. So with that, we'll take a brief of ease and we set up for our friend's presentation.
Take care.
Thank you. We'll be at ease. We'll come back to order, and now we have the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, and I want to welcome the Commissioner, and we will have a little more time with you because Labor Workforce Development were able to end up, but we will, our scheduled time for ending is 3:30. So would you go ahead and introduce yourself to the record, and then we will
Well, good afternoon, Co-Chair Seaton and Foster, and committee members. For the record, I'm Mark Lucan with the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. I have with me Amanda Holland, who is our acting deputy commissioner, and she and I will both be briefing you today. Our department mission is to keep Alaska moving through service and infrastructure. Per Alaska Statute 444.42, the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities is responsible for planning, research, design, construction, operation, maintenance, and protection of all state transportation systems and many public facilities. This is achieved through our core services and our strategic approach known as results-based alignment. Preserve includes projects and activities that extend the life of our existing infrastructure. Infrastructure repair and bridge preservation are two examples. Operate supports safe and efficient movement on existing infrastructure. Snow and ice management and operating certificated airports are two examples. Modernize improves infrastructure to meet current standards and capacity, and we do this through project delivery. Provide encompasses the services the department provides to move people and goods on the existing infrastructure. Operating ferries and operating the Alaska International Airport System again, are two examples. Results-based alignment is the service delivery framework from which we measure the contribution of the services we deliver in support of our mission. You have additional links to source documents that are provided on this slide.
For the record, my name is Amanda Holland. I'm Acting Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. The next four slides show the budget charts prepared by the Division of Legislative Finance. This chart provides a 10-year look back of our unrestricted general fund and designated general fund funding. For our fiscal year 2019 governor's proposed budget, our unrestricted general fund equals $177.9 million, and our designated general fund equals $97.9 million. These numbers are close to fiscal year 2009 levels. This chart shows all funds by line item. Of note are commodities and travel, which are below the 2009 level. You'll notice that in fiscal year 2019, the services line has increased. This is primarily due to personal services being transferred to the services line to fund shared services reimbursable service agreements. This is for Shared Services of Alaska, the Office of Information Technology, and the Division of Facility Services. In slide 5, we are looking at general fund only, which includes unrestricted general fund and designated general fund sources. Highways, aviation, and facilities, and the Alaska Marine Highway System make up 94% of the department's general fund operating budget. This means 94% of our general fund operating budget goes directly to serving Alaskans. In the fiscal year 2019 governor's proposed budget, all of the department's general fund appropriations are below the fiscal year 2009 level. On slide 6, when looking at all funds for the fiscal year 2019 governor's proposed budget, highways, aviation, and facilities has the largest share of the operating budget. This results delivery unit now includes $4.2 million for the Division of Facilities Services. The department has added a new division in fiscal year 2019, the Division of Facility Services. The statewide public facilities component was consolidated from another appropriation into this new division, which also includes the regional facilities components. In slide 7, we show a breakdown of our department by results delivery unit. You can see funding breakdown by fund category and the number of positions in the third and fourth columns. The three farthest right columns show constitutional, federal, and statutory requirements. The rating of importance column in the middle reflects the department's rating as critical, important, beneficial, or status quo. And in the interest of time, I won't go line by line. But I would like to point out the administration and support results delivery unit includes several types of services, including measurement standards, commercial vehicle enforcement, statewide aviation, program development, and statewide planning. The commissioner and I would like to address a couple of the columns, specifically number of Alaskans served and rating of effectiveness.
We left the number of Alaskans served by column blank. It is a challenge to measure this quantitatively. The state's transportation infrastructure directly or indirectly impacts every Alaskan every day. The system is working all the time, providing connectivity and access for drivers, pilots, and passengers, that's the direct side, and then delivering goods such as food and medicine or services such as emergency response, indirect. We indicated effective on our rating of effectiveness as we are currently meeting the department's mission. Results-based alignment performance data confirms this effectiveness rating.
In slide 8, we show the design, engineering, and construction unit, which is responsible for design, engineering, and oversight of the capital program. This includes roads, bridges, and runways, generally referred to as horizontal construction. The state's infrastructure has been developed to address the unique needs of Alaskans on the move. Only 2% of Alaska's land area is accessible by road, and 82% of Alaska communities are not connected to the road system. The State Equipment Fleet Results Delivery Unit procures, maintains, and disposes of vehicles, equipment, and their attachments, which are owned and operated by the executive branch, legislative affairs, and the court system. It is a shared service that is responsible for approximately 7,129 pieces of state equipment and vehicles. The Highways, Aviation, and Facilities Unit is responsible for the operation, maintenance, safeguard, and control of the state's infrastructure system of highways, airports, harbors, and public facilities. Please note that in this slide, the three regional components have been combined into one line for design, one for construction, and one for highways and aviation.
Safety is at the forefront of everything we do. Enhancing and further strengthening the department's safety culture is part of our strategic plan and includes a focus on health, safety, and environment. Safety of the traveling public is a top priority. In addition, our employees are our most valuable asset. We are working to reduce incidents and injuries for the traveling public as well as our employees. At DOTMPF, everyone is seen as a safety leader. An important aspect of safety is employee health. In our department, employees encourage each other to walk during breaks and or lunch. We host Aetna wellness program functions at our facilities. We post monthly health wellness related newsletter at various facilities. And on my Commissioner's Corner webpage, I offer vitamin D awareness and education. DOTMPF budgeted healthcare costs have decreased by $2.5 million in the last 6 years. Healthcare costs at the department have remained steady as a percentage of our total operating budget over the last 6 years, between 8% and 8.5%, which is lower than the FY 2018 statewide average of roughly 35%. Well, the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities is an economic driver for Alaska. The overall economic impact of transportation includes access, connectivity, and mobility. These are essential for economic activity to take place in our communities. The infrastructure DOTMPF designs, constructs, operates, and preserves allows Alaskans to live and thrive in their communities. The Department of Transportation Public Facilities is absolutely necessary for the economic health and vitality of our state. Well, thank you very much for this opportunity to testify, and we're happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I was referring back to pages 7 and 8. You have a heck of a lot of other funding sources. You got UGF and some DGF, but your statewide engineering and design, regional, all these have other. How much of that is federal? I don't see a breakdown. It just says other.
Through the chair, Representative Thompson. Other is comprised of a number of different fund sources, and it includes such things as interagency receipts, international airport receipts, capital improvement program receipts, the Whittier Tunnel receipts. We have Alaska liquid natural gas and aviation fuel tax receipts, rural airport receipts, and rural airport interagency receipts. So our other column is approximately 11 different fund sources, and one of those is our capital improvement program receipts.
Which is federal?
Through the chair, Representative Thompson, in the operating budget, we have very little direct federal funding. Hmm. What happens is we have our capital budget, and then we have employees who are compensated through the operating budget who can charge to a capital project, and that's what that capital improvement program receipt allows us to do.
Follow up, Representative Thompson. Yeah, on your engineering services and design, aren't most of those charged to federal projects?
Through the chair, Representative Thompson, that is correct. Quite a few of them direct charge to a capital project. In the operating budget, we have to have authority for them to be able to charge to those projects.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Further questions? Representative Grant.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kind of going along the same lines as Representative Thompson, the design, engineering, construction budget on page 6, or not budget, but funding, has gone down the last few years. Is that connected to the decrease in the capital budget as well, or is it?
Through the chair, Representative Gren, as we have looked for efficiencies in our department, one of the things we have done is we have reduced our unrestricted general fund in the design, engineering, and construction component wherever possible. And so that has shown a decrease in that area. We have also deleted positions in that results delivery unit, which has also reduced the budget overall.
Follow-up? Further questions? Within slide 7 and 8, we have quite, with the DGF and the other, is your experience that you're receiving most of that or some of that hollow authority that isn't received and then it has to be, and then it has to be funded from other ways, such as DGF?
Mr. Chair, we have taken a really close look at unrealizable authority, and in fact, in our FY19 proposed changes, we are eliminating some of that unrealizable authority. However, most of that authority is realized.
Okay, thank you. Further questions for you, Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With your funding being down to the levels of FY2009, is that what you said? What has been the overall impact in terms of in your ability to meet your goals to preserve, operate, and modernize and provide? Can you point at one particular area that maybe we're starting to fall a little bit short because of the reduced funding? Which of these maybe we're not doing as good a job as we might be able to do?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz. An example is if we look at highways and aviation, when we look at preserve and operate, we need to care for our road system. Most of our road system in Alaska is funded through federal funds, and so the state, in accepting those funds, has a responsibility to keep the roads in good repair. What we have seen happen over the last few years is a reduction, for example, in the quality of our traffic signs. When they get shot up, we can't replace them immediately, and so we have a conditions rating. We rate our roads and surfaces from an A to an F, and we try to keep a B rating, and we have seen some of those ratings slip in the last few years. Culverts has slipped, and we see potholes is one that we try very hard to maintain at the B level, but it also has been more challenging to meet our standards.
So, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So you'd say in the preservation of Alaska's transportation infrastructure is starting to suffer?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, that is correct. What we're seeing is a faster deterioration of the infrastructure.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman?
Representative Ortiz.
Thank you. When we look at your chart that talks about funding levels for the different departments, and you have highways, aviation, marine highway system, and then design, engineering, construction. All of those have, you know, flattened out or tailed down. How much of the design, engineering, construction goes into those other two? In other words, does the marine highways, aviation facilities take the majority of that design, engineering, construction, or does the marine highway, or is it about equal? Can you answer that question?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, I want to make sure I understand the question.
In other words, your design and engineering construction part of your funding is a significant part of your funding. So my question is, that money goes to where? In other words, those designers, those engineers, is it highways? Are we talking about all highways? Are we talking about partial marine highways too? How does that work?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, thank you for that clarification. The majority of the funding for the design, engineering, and construction group is focused on our surface transportation, which is primarily our roads and highways. We do have some capital funding that goes to the marine highway system, and they have vessel construction engineers in the marine highway results delivery unit that works on those overhauls.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Since we've got a little bit of time, if it's okay, can I ask a little bit more in depth than the surface, since we've got some time?
Sure.
Yeah, thank you. One of the things I wanted to ask is, you talked about repair, maintaining our infrastructure, but there was an appropriation that is requested of us that specifically relates to commuter transit out to the valley. As far as I know, none of my colleagues from the valley knew that was coming. It took from other funds that were both, I believe, resurfacing, if I recall, and maybe some Kinnick arm. I mean, I'm trying to understand where in the world that came from, and if that was some of the whether it's resurfacing or others, which is part of the maintaining that you're discussing. We're going to have to resurface out there. We do it every couple of years. Why did it go to something that, as far as I understand from what I've talked to from my colleagues that are out in the area, no one even requested, no one understood that it was a substantial amount of money?
Through the chair, Representative Pruitt, this initiative was actually brought to the governor's attention by the mayors of both the Valley and Anchorage, and so that was really his response. And this proposal is coming from that group of government public servants. And again, this is a proposal to look at the viability of a pilot project. The money that was identified is actually it has been asked for a repeal and reappropriation from. At least a portion of it is from the Kinnick Arm Crossing, but again, this is capital funding, not preservation funding, and so that's the nature of the repeal and reappropriation request.
Follow up, Representative Pruitt.
Do you think that someone in the legislature should have probably been notified? I mean, it was a big surprise. I got phone calls afterwards from colleagues going, "What in the world's going on?" I mean, this is a big surprise. If there were individuals that had this was the they had elevated this, and the governor felt that this was important, at some point, shouldn't there have been communication to the members of the legislature that will ultimately be making the decisions or advocating for this, so that they were not kind of surprised by this, especially because it was coming from something that many of the members in the legislature had from that area had advocated for quite some time, the Kinnick Arm Crossing. And I mean, why weren't they contacted in some capacity or some sort of interaction before finding out about it through either the press or looking at it, the bill themselves?
To the chair, Representative Pruitt, I don't have a good answer for that, and probably that's something that we could do better in the future.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead. Already down. Representative Tilton was in line before.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Talking about maintenance, I just would like I understand that you have the public facilities and the leased buildings, and I understand that you're doing some kind of comprehensive review of those so that we can make determinations whether those buildings are worth the state even owning. Can you tell us a little bit about that, the study that you're doing, and when we might be able to see something like that?
Through the chair, Representative Tilton, we are, in fact, beginning the work to do a facility inventory. So that is part of this Division of Facility Services effort. And we're also doing a facility condition inventory. So we can just establish a baseline of the condition of the facilities that our state owns, as well as the square footage of those facilities, so that then we can begin the process of and looking at is there opportunity for consolidation? Is there opportunity for moving some of these buildings on? In other words, selling them. So that is an ongoing process. It's going to take a little while because there's quite a few buildings in our state that we own, but we are in the process of conducting that effort right now.
Follow up. Thank you, Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Looking at your funding overall for the Rain Highway System, it looks like it's down about $38 million since FY13. I know a lot of the communication that comes out in terms of the impacts of those reductions comes in terms of weeks of service, but that doesn't equate to an anecdotal account of what that looks like. When you see a reduction in weeks of service, what does that mean in terms of, can you give us some specific examples of who's receiving significantly less service than they were back in 2013?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, I think we'll have to get some specific answers to you for that. I don't really think we've got that analysis today with us, but I think what we could safely say is that we have tried to minimize the impact to any one community, you know, and that has been one of the goals that we have tried to achieve, is that we would not stop serving any of the 33 Alaskan communities that we currently serve, despite the number of the amount of money we've been cut in the Marine Highway system.
And then, so, and I understand that and appreciate that you wouldn't stop serving any individual community. So really the way that would then be reflected would be just less service for all the communities, significantly less service for all the communities than what might have been there in 2013. Is that right?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, I think we could say that there is less service to our communities from a frequency perspective. I think that's the piece. You know, as far as service to our communities, we've continued to serve every community, as I said, but maybe not quite at the frequency they saw in 2013.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And Representative Gutberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Looking at page 7 and 8, I'm just going to hit the three highest percent of costs through fees, statewide aviation, your fleet, and international airports. I imagine the fleet is 100% because everybody reimburses you, because you just do that as a cost back. But can you talk about the other two and the proposal for rural airports, if that's in part of that?
I can start. Okay. I'll, through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, I'll start with the international airport system. You know, that is a 100% funded through rates and fees that are collected at those two airport systems, you know, those two airports. So that's why you see that high percentage, is because it is a 100% funded by the people who use those two airports, the carriers. There are 32 signatory carriers that participate in that. But then, you know, any other carrier that would use our international airport system is also paying those rates and fees. So that's why that, you know, you see that percentage.
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, for statewide aviation, the majority of the funding for that comes through leasing. So we have airport leasing where we would collect money for individuals who have concessionaires on an airport or who are leasing property from us for while the airport is operational. And so that's why you see the 87% on the percent of costs through fees.
One more question, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, I'm just trying to find out which line you're talking about on which page.
Oh. 7 and 8.
So statewide aviation is on 7. It's the third line up from the bottom.
So just if I may. So you probably don't have this available, but do you know how much you pay for internet access across your department?
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, I don't have that number off the top of my head, but I can find it for you.
Okay, and if you could break it down regionally or as fine in detail as you can, that'd be great. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, several years ago, we had a review done of Anchorage International Airport and the best use of that facility and the ability for that facility to generate revenue. Mr. Chair, would it be possible maybe if we could get a report on what was done with that? There was some pretty high-level recommendations on square footage, what could be used. There's office space there. Seemed to be pretty large for offices, and there was recommendations to reduce the size of them, maybe to lease out some more space. And I don't think we ever had a follow-up on what was accomplished or what the department did on those recommendations. It'd be interesting to see that. Also, Mr. Chair.
Let me stop you there. Commissioner, is there a report or a follow-up available on that? Do you know?
Mr. Chair, I imagine there is. I don't have it with me, but we can certainly get it.
That'd be appreciated.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, because we're always, you know, the public asks us about getting new revenue and stuff like that, and we looked at that. We should always have follow-up on that and show the public what we did. Also, you know, we look at the requests for increases in different budget, but who owns that huge railroad building right in the middle of Anchorage International and Ted Stevens International Airport, the Sheffield building, I think they call it. Is that an asset of DOT, PF?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, that is an Alaska Railroad Corporation facility.
Follow-up?
Follow-up, Representative Newman.
Do you get receipts, receipts authority or anything from the railroad on the value of that property, the taxes that would be generated if there were municipal taxes on that property? To me, there's a huge building sitting right in the middle of the airport doing absolutely nothing. And we have the railroad coming looking for positive train control money and other things like that. Why is this building sitting there? I get asked continually, is it a state asset?
And Representative Newman, I think we'll have to ask the railroad that if that's their building. Commissioner?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, I think we could probably gather that information, but it would be a good discussion with the railroad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Are there further questions, DOT? I wanted to say thank you for the safety note, and I will note that the commissioners are the employers of not and responsible not only for the health of their employees, but of all the dependents that are insured through their employment. And so whatever we can do to reduce health care costs by avoiding avoidable health care circumstances, I don't know how we're going to bend that curve down unless each department does its job for preserving health and avoidable diseases and accidents and all those other things. So thank you for concentrating on that and making that part of your presentation. Is there any other, seeing no other questions, that will be our DOT presentation today. I'm sure that the subcommittee will want to go into more details with you. And our next meeting will be January 30th at 9 a.m. We will take up House Bill 287, Appropriation for Education and Student Transportation. And again, that's the early funding of education. And HB 213, Public School Trust Fund. Our intention is to look at 287. We had public testimony. We'll be looking at amendments. We'll be, my intention is to, or the co-chair's intention, I think, is that we will take a vote on that if we're ready at that time. And House Bill 213, we did not have much. We just had a short introduction, so we'll have more discussion of that. And Mr. Co-chair, are we looking at public testimony on that, on the Public School Trust Fund for tomorrow's meeting, 9 a.m.? Okay, and so that may be available because it was on the previous schedule. So with that, seeing no other questions, we will be adjourned at 3:12.